My guest today is a man who has played over 1,000 professional baseball games in a 12-year career across the minors, Indy Leagues and the MLB, spending parts of last year with the AAA Oklahoma City Dodgers and Indianapolis Indians, and with the South Maryland Blue Crabs of the Atlantic League. A graduate of Vanderbilt University's Baseball Finishing School, he's helped support a new generation of baseball talent from his native Bahamas and has been the backbone of the Great Britain baseball outfield for many years. Good evening, Antoine Richardson. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing quite fine. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Really looking forward to chatting a bit about your career, how it started, and where it's going next, particularly in relation to what you're doing in the Bahamas. So I guess the right place to start is at the start, yeah? So your career, such as it is, started, as I mentioned there, at Vanderbilt, which, as anyone who follows baseball at all knows, that's a pretty illustrious place to play your college baseball. How come you ended up at Vanderbilt? How did that happen, and what was it like to pull on their colors and represent that university?
Well, I think you have to kind of go back a few years before Vanderbilt when you talk about the start, because you got to think about just actually growing up in the Bahamas, where we don't play baseball in the high school. So I kind of grew up playing fast pitch softball in the Bahamas, and one of my good friends, his father, had a piece of property which was on a farmland, and he just made a room for us to kind of start to throw around the baseball. I remember we used to shovel horse manure and cow manure off the field just to be able to run around and play. And so that's kind of where it started. It started there. And I actually remember a game that we call rounders in the Bahamas that we would play on the beach. We don't play it anymore, but we would play it on the beach with a piece of wood and a tennis ball. And I remember if you caught it on one bounce, you know, that recorded an out. But if you hit a ball in the air and somebody caught it, that was worth three outs. So that's kind of how I started to play any form of the game of baseball, you know, in the way of softball and this game called rounders. And when I was 14, I actually left the Bahamas. I went to high school in America. Had a very tough time adjusting to the culture, and not until I was 16 that I started playing baseball in high school at the 11th grade level on a full-time basis, I guess. And after leaving high school, I was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles, but I decided to go to junior college. And I went to junior college for 2 years, was drafted my first year out of junior college, but decided to stay. And then after my second year at junior college, that's when I was recruited by Vanderbilt University, and I headed up to Vanderbilt for 2 years. The recruiting coordinator at the time, his name was Eric Backage, and now he's the head baseball coach at the University of Michigan. He came down, he saw me play, and we just kind of hit it off. I had a pretty good game. They were looking for a guy with some speed and a guy that can play a little bit of center field, and I kind of fit the mold for what they were looking for at their program at the time. It was just a good fit. Going to Nashville, Tennessee was tough because it was something a little different for me coming from the islands and dealing with the cold weather and whatnot. I actually remember on my recruiting trip, it was about 60 degrees, and I told the coach, I said, "Hey, if it gets any colder than this, I can't come to your school." And he assured me that day, he's like, "It never gets colder than 60 degrees. And my first day at Vanderbilt for practice, it snowed, and we were definitely on the field in about 40 degree weather.
Really? So he was telling you a lie just to get you there. He was that desperate.
Well, I think it was all a joke. I think I took him serious, but I think he was joking the whole time. But we had a great relationship. We still have a relationship up to this day that's pretty strong. And so we laugh about it now, but one of the best experiences of my life. And I'm glad I got an opportunity to go to Vanderbilt and kind of be a part of that group of guys that started what Vanderbilt is today, you know, kind of that turnaround. And I remember, I think my first year there, we made it to the SEC tournament and got into the Super Regionals. And I think that was the first time, you know, Vanderbilt had been to a Super Regional ever or in a very, very long time. So just to be a part of this, that turnaround and this new era of baseball with Coach Tim Corbin and his staff was was very memorable part of my baseball career, and will be a very memorable part of my baseball career when it's all said and done.
Yeah, so you mentioned there that you were drafted out of high school and you were drafted again out of junior college. When we've done these chats before with people, it always seems like a good story. Everyone's got a good story about draft day, but I guess with you, it's kind of take your pick. You were actually drafted four times, so tell us your draft day story and pick whichever one you want, if you like.
Well, you know what? The thing is, like, coming from the Bahamas, it was all new to me the first time it happened. I remember even calling my mom and told her what happened. And she said, I told her I got drafted. And she said, what's a draft? You know, so it was all brand new. So I it was at the time, I just wasn't familiar with the situation my first time in it. And I was just getting a lot of information from a lot of different people. So it was crazy. I was getting pulled in the direction of going to a 4-year school. I was getting pulled in the direction of signing a contract. I was getting pulled in the direction to sign to a junior college. So that was difficult for me at the time because simply, like, we didn't have anybody in the Bahamas that had went through that process, so to speak. And so it was something that was brand new for me, something that was brand new for our country. And so it was going to be a precedent, and it was going to be something that was kind of going to be the first time for it to happen. So it was difficult. I didn't have anybody to really lean on in that sense. There was another guy before me. His name is Angelo Burrows, and he signed out of high school. But, you know, it just was very difficult. I'm glad I took the route I did take, but it was a very difficult decision at times just because I had no one to give me any advice or no one to kind of steer me in a direction or give me just the information for me to make the decision that would have taken me down the path I wanted to. But in retrospect, I'm very proud and very excited of the path that I did take.
Yeah, absolutely. It didn't turn out too badly. So you were drafted by the Giants when you eventually went to join professional team in 2005. But it took then 6 years for you to get that call to the bigs. So what were those 6 years like, sort of spending 4 years in the Giants system and then 2 years in the Atlanta system? I guess it's a bit of a strange experience. Again, very different to anything that you would have had over in the Bahamas or even, I guess, at college too.
Right. So the unique thing about my career was that, you know, it was a lot of firsts for me. I think, and, you know, after when I got to the major leagues, I'll work back for you, but when I got to the major leagues in 2011, that was the first time a Bahamian had been to the major leagues in 27 or 28 years. And so basically, last time somebody was in the major leagues, I was not even born as yet. I think I was born a couple months after the last guy played in the major leagues. And so it was just, everything was brand new. So getting to the Giants system, when I first got to the Giants system, I knew it was gonna be a dogfight. It was gonna be a dogfight for every opportunity that I got. And I played well, very well, for the first 3 years, and I was there. And then I had a mediocre year, and tides turned really quick. But there were a lot of struggles. There were a lot of times that I questioned whether or not I was doing the right thing or playing the right game. But my support system back home, my family, which has always been my support system, and just the fact that I loved that they always showed me, allowed me to kind of get through a lot of those struggling times. And, you know, there were times when I thought about quitting. But I think to give you one story that really stands out in those 6 years that kind of, I think, helped propel me to play in the game a different way for the right reasons and get me to the big leagues was when I was released from the San Francisco Giants in 2009. I went to play independent ball. And I went to play independent ball. I had a good year. And then I actually remember that offseason, I signed with the Atlanta Braves. I went to spring training. I was having a very good spring training. On the last day of spring training, they released me. And I remember thinking to myself, like, got released. So I go to independent ball again, and I meet this guy. His name was Kelly Hunt, and we're standing in the outfield. He said, "You know what, Antoine? I was complaining about the way we looked on the field. I was like, we looked like a bare league softball team." he laughed at me, and he said, "You know what, Antoine?" He said, "We baseball players, all we do is complain." He's like, "If you think about it, it's either too hot or it's too cold. Something's always wrong." And I remember, and I said to myself, I was trying to convince him that I don't complain. And he was like, "No, Tuan, I'm not saying you, I'm just talking to all of us in general. So me and you included." And And so from that day, I remember saying to myself, you know what, I'm not going to complain anymore. About 10 minutes later, I was complaining about something. But I was more aware of the fact that, like we do complain. I thought about how, you know, baseball, when I was a lot younger, how baseball was just all about just playing the game. And long story short, about 2 weeks later, I was in the gym, coming out of the gym. I got a call from the Atlanta Braves, and they were like, hey, we want to bring you back. And I was like, okay, awesome. And I asked the coach if I'd come to the game that night, just wanted to support the guys. He said, yeah, sure, come onto the field, come in the dugout. So I watched the game. We win. Everybody's excited for me. As I'm clearing out my locker to leave, I see Kelly Hunt in the locker room as well, and he's carrying a bag out as well. And I was like, hey, what's going on? And he basically said he just got released. And it was a powerful moment for me because we were going in two different directions, but I knew that conversation that I had with him was going to be so important for me and my development going forward. And it was almost like we were destined to meet. And so that was pretty awesome. And so after that story, I kind of had, after the interaction with him, I kind of had a different mindset about when I played the game, and had just a new passion for it. And the way I went about it was just a little bit more enjoyable. And I felt like a little leaguer again, playing a man sport. So that was fun. And I think that is what kind of allowed me to have fun and do the things that I needed to do to give myself an opportunity to play in the major leagues.
That sounds brilliant. It's like a great attitude to have. And do you still know of Kelly? Is he still playing himself, or did he go on and get more opportunities too?
He didn't play anymore after that. He retired, and he actually living in Ohio, and he was coaching the last time we had spoke. So I know but he stayed in baseball in some capacity.
That's fantastic. And obviously things at that point took a positive turn for you, because in 2011, when you went back to the Braves, you did get that call to the majors. And it would be great just to hear from you how that was, you know, after 6 years of, well, I wouldn't say toil, particularly from what you've just said. You were trying to enjoy it as much as you could, but, you know, where better to enjoy it than down at Turner Field, I guess. That must have been a pretty amazing feeling when that call finally came.
You know, it was pretty exciting. I remember I was at a pizza parlor getting some pizza, and my coaches was trying to get a hold of me, asked me to come by. And I was like, I'm eating some pizza, so I get over there about 30 minutes after the call, and you know, they tell me I'm going to Atlanta. But usually when you're going, I was a double A at the time, and usually when you go to AAA, you gotta fly to Atlanta and then drive to AAA. So I was just assuming I was going to AAA. And he just basically said, well, when you get to Atlanta, get in a taxi and make sure you stop at Turner Field. And I was like, what? I was like, why y'all stop messing with me? So that was pretty cool, man. Anytime you kind of work for something and you work hard at it and you make sacrifices and to kind of see that actually come to fruition is pretty special. But, you know, I realized though at that time, you know, being a little older and having paid my dues, there was still work to be done. And I kind of got to Turner Field and I was fortunate enough to get into the game that day. And I remember not until I actually looked up and saw my face on the jumbotron when it really hit me and I was in the batter's box that I was in the big league. So it took a little time for it to sink in for me, but definitely a special moment. Definitely a special moment. It's pretty tough to kind of to savor the moment until I think you're finally done with playing baseball. But I'm sure once I look back, when it's all said and done, I could cherish that moment just a little bit more.
I think given what you've said, it maybe explains what then went on to happen whilst you're in that batter's box. Because if I understand rightly, you were up against some guy who's not bad, right? A guy called Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, it was that was pretty funny because I remember that. I mean, obviously I'll never forget that at bat. But yeah, I was up against Clayton Kershaw, and obviously he's one of the best to ever do it. And I think he won the Cy Young that year as well. But you know, the whole game, I'm sitting in the dugout and I'm watching him. I'm talking to Michael Bourne on the bench, and he's telling me, he's like, man, he's just getting ahead with the fastball and just putting everybody away with the breaking ball. And so as I'm walking to the plate, I'm thinking to myself, like, I should bunt. But I was like, I can't bunt because all my friends in the Bahamas are going to laugh at me if I try to bunt. And so, so I was like, I can't bunt. And I was like, I better swing it. I better try and be aggressive early because, you know, if he gets ahead of me, that was it. And I couldn't tell you if I swung at one first pitch that whole year. That might have been the first pitch I swung at the whole year. And I probably closed my eyes and the bat hit the ball.
Well, you're saying it, and I'm not gonna back down from that. From what you've just said about being on the Jumbotron, it's what I would do. You're a much better player, baseball player than I am, but that's certainly what I would do. And if you did the same, then I feel a little bit better about that. So from Atlanta, you played a few games in the bigs, and you were with Atlanta, I think, for the following year, right? Or did you move on from there then?
After Atlanta, I went on to the Baltimore Orioles, and I was in the minor leagues with them for a year between Double A and Triple A, and had a decent year. After that, I ended up with the Twins, and after the Twins, got to the Yankees. And so those were the years leading up to 2014.
Yeah, we'll come on to the Yankees in a minute. Just so you've answered this question in a sense in your story about Kelly Hunt, but I just wanted to sort of dwell on what it is that keeps you going. You know, you've said it's about enjoyment, and it, you know, that comes across in the conversation that we're having. But as a guy who has dealt with injuries, your fair share of setbacks, outrightings, DFAs, and so on, is it just that love of the game and this idea that, you know, you've had an opportunity coming from where you have that not many people had before you? Do you think it's maybe your background in the Bahamas has got something to do with the way that you've been able to sort of pick yourself back up off the canvas and go at it again?
Definitely the Bahamas has played a big role and my background played a very big role in what I accomplished, because I said growing up, I never saw minor league baseball players or major league baseball players. I'd all heard stories about how good they were and talented, but physically never saw them play. And I knew how difficult it was for me to chase my dream without having an example to follow by or something I could see that made it seem as if it was reality. And it almost seemed when I was chasing that dream, I was chasing this fictitious aspiration that couldn't be gained, because I've never seen it. And for me, quitting wasn't an option, because I would think back on what I represented to the children in the Bahamas, and I wanted them to be able to see somebody actually going through and somebody actually doing it. And you know, I kind of made that commitment that I had to keep going until we got a couple of guys in the minor league system and playing professional baseball before that would even be a possibility. And so for me, they were my inspiration. The children in the Bahamas were my inspiration to keep going, because many a times, you know, before I wanted to quit, I wanted to stop playing for many reasons. But because of them, I felt it was something that I needed to do for myself and I needed to do for them.
That's absolutely amazing. So as you said in your answer to the previous question, in 2014, you ended up with the New York Yankees, the biggest sports franchise on planet Earth, which, you know, that's not a bad story to tell the kids back in the Bahamas, is it?
No, not at all, man. I you don't even have to tell a story. Anything with the Yankees is almost like you don't even have to tell a story. Everybody kind of knows, you know.
So you were in Scranton first of all, and I was looking up your baseball reference page again earlier on today, and I before we come on to the story that everyone asks you about the Yankees, I wanted to ask you about another one, because one of the guys who I run the podcast with, Tom, is absolutely obsessed with position players pitching, and I looked at your baseball reference page and I noticed that whilst you were at Scranton, you did this. You pitched one inning. You gave up two walks, but no runs in a game in AAA for Scranton in 2014. So I wanted to ask you about that, if you remember it, how it came about and what was going through your mind when it was happening.
I think I remember pretty well. I think we're playing the White Sox AAA organization, and we just were going through a lot of pitches. It was like, I want to say it was an extra in the game, and the manager came down to me and he's like, "Tuan, I hate to ask you to do this, but you think you could pitch?" And, you know, my first thought is like, I could barely get the ball from the outfield to the infield, so I don't know how that'll work, but I'll give it a shot. And I got on the mound and threw my warm-up pitches, and I'm thinking, okay, this is not too bad. And then all of a sudden, the batter gets in the box and that strike zone shrinks to like the size of a nickel. And I just somehow, some way, I just tossed it up there, and I was just hoping for outs. And And those guys just, I think they just felt bad for me, so they got themselves out.
I think you do yourself a disservice. I'm guessing you probably lost the game, but it was, you finished it and you didn't give up a run. So, that's not a bad it's not a bad pitching line. If you finish with that, then you finish your pitching career with an ERA of zero, which is, about as good as it can get.
Should be in the Hall of Fame for it.
Yeah, why not? But one place where you will be in the Hall of Fame if you aren't already is the other story about your time at the New York Yankees. Which for those listening who don't know this story, you were the man who scored the run in what is one of the most famous at bats in the history of baseball, when Derek Jeter scored the run in his last ever appearance at the plate. So can you just relay to the people listening to this podcast what your involvement was, what it was like to be involved in that moment?
Well, I'll tell you, man, it was kind of surreal to be a part of that whole year and that part of my time up there with New York, because obviously we all knew that Derek was going to retire at the end of the year. The fans knew, and they showed up everywhere we went. Especially at home, to pay tribute to him and show their love for him. And well-deserved, man. Probably the best teammate or one of the best teammates I've ever had. And, just a very good person in general. So take the player out of it, and just a very unique and very genuine and genuinely good person. And so it was a rainy day, and I remember we all thought that we weren't even going to play that game. We thought we were going to just hop on a plane and go up to Boston and finish the season. But his career, it was just like a storybook. And about 45 minutes before game time, the skies had cleared up. They pulled the top off, and it was like, here we go, time to go to work, And, I think his first at bat, he might have hit a double off the wall. And, it was just like, wow, this guy just always finds a way to come up big in the big moments. And we get to the ninth inning, and we have a lead. Our closer comes in, so I'm not really even at this time even thinking that I'm going to get into the game, because at that time I was at that time in the game I would have been coming in as a pinch runner, and sure enough the Orioles score three runs and tie the game, and I'm like, I better go ahead and get loose. And before you know it, the guy. It's Jose Perella leads off with a single, and Joe Girardi looks down. He's like, Antoine, you ready? He's like, hey, go in. And I'm like, all right. And so right now your heart's pounding, because it's been a playoff atmosphere this whole day. I remember even some of the veterans like, wow, they'd never seen an atmosphere like this, for a regular season game. And so I get the first, Brett Gardner bunts me over to second base, and it's just like, here we go again. And I think everybody at the stadium was like on their feet at this time, because now Derek come up to play with a chance to win the game in his what would be his last at bat at Yankee Stadium. And but it's tough for you to stay focused, and it's tough for you as a player in those moments sometimes to just think about doing your job, and you get caught up as a fan sometimes as well. And then I think a lot of us that day were getting caught up as a fan, recognizing the magnitude of the situation that was going on that night. And I'm just talking about the fact that it's his last game in Yankee Stadium. And so I guess when I was out there, I was torn between the fan and torn between being a player, and just knew that like I had a job to do, but at the same time knew that I was about to witness something very, very special. And sure enough, he hits his base hit, and I'm like, I'm running and I'm thinking to myself, he's going to stop me at third base, because he hit it pretty hard. And Yankee Stadium is pretty short in right field, and Nick Markakis has a very good arm. And right before I hit third base, I pick up the coach and he's waving me home. And I'm like, oh boy. I'm like, I better turn on the wheels, because now I know for sure I have no choice but to score, because if I don't score, I will get run out of the city in a heartbeat. And I'm just chugging along. It felt like home plate was a mile away. And I never dared dive head first. But at this point in time, I knew I had no choice. I knew like I had to score, and I had to like kind of put it all on the line because of the moment. And, I kind of slid in there, and it was just like, wow, like this just happened. You know, it was just like a storybook. And I was like, it's unbelievable. I think everybody was in awe. Everybody was just shocked. Like, how does this guy do it all the time? You know, come up with the big hit in the right moment. And like, it's almost like every big moment he like executed it. So it was just fun to be a part of it. It was fun to be a part of that moment and kind of, you know, share that moment with the team and with him. And I think it was just so fun for us to see him go out of New York that day like that. You know, I don't think you scripted, you can script it any better than that.
Yeah. I mean, it is genuinely storybook, as you, to use the word that you used and everyone uses about Derek Jeter. It is, even as a Red Sox fan, begrudgingly, I can say it is absolutely awesome that that happened. I just sort of wondered what did Derek say to you? I hope he gave you your due for diving headfirst and getting into home plate. I hope he gave you a pat on the back and bought you a beer afterwards.
he definitely took time out to say, you know, good job or whatnot, and he definitely took care of me. You know, I'll leave it at that. But I think for. It was just a very emotional, it was an emotional day for him. You know, he talks about the fact that, you know, he was trying to hold back the tears. So I don't even think that when it was all said and done that he kind of like, you know, at that point in time, probably realized exactly what was going on. Because I even remember like afterwards in the locker room, and I think, I feel it's almost like, it, to me, it seemed that he was just like exhausted, like emotionally and mentally, you know, from it all. So I think like, he, like, for lack of a better word, may have been in the daze of what was going on, you know what I mean? Because it was so emotional for him.
Yeah, yeah. I can well imagine, you know, having, you know, memories of watching him doing it and then seeing it again as a Sox fan with Ortiz last year. It was interesting and pretty crazy to watch as a fan. So you spent, as I said at the start, last year, you spent some time in Oklahoma City and in Indianapolis playing AAA, and then some time down in South Maryland with the Blue Crabs in the Atlantic League. So putting your sort of professional career, if you will, behind you, and talking a bit about, you know, the hobby that you've had since, I think it's 2009, which has been working with and playing in the Great Britain baseball team. I just wanted to sort of pick up and start off again with wondering how you actually ended up doing that. Now, I know, and for the benefit of people listening, that anyone who has a grandparent who was born in the Bahamas before you became an independent country from the UK and Great Britain in 1973 is eligible. But I wondered how you came to understand that fact and how you ended up in the system in the first place.
Right. Well, I actually thought it was a parent, and I just found that it was grandparents this last time, because I was going by my mom before,
right,
the first time. But I remember when the World Baseball Classic came up and, you know, the qualifiers, and I was thinking like, wow, it'd be pretty special if the Bahamas had a team. And I remember like reaching out to my agent about it and trying to figure out if, you know, if I kind of qualify, because I saw some other friends of mine who had qualified to play on different teams. And I think between Major League Baseball and all the people that are involved, they kind of made a connection where, you know, I would have been able to be eligible to play for Great Britain. And you know, that was one of the best things that could happen. I mean, it was one of the greatest experiences for me in my baseball career. You know, go into Germany in Regensburg and play in that first qualifier. So that was pretty unique. But yeah, I basically, you know, did my due diligence. I think my agent did his due diligence, and I think the Federation in Great Britain did their due diligence to make that happen. So there's a lot of thanks to go around to a lot of people for making that happen.
So you played in Regensburg, and then you played again this September just gone, September 2016 in Brooklyn. And this time round, it wasn't just you. It was a rather broader field of Bahamians. In fact, it was almost a field full of Bahamians. And I understand that you played something of a pivotal role in bringing the likes of Champ Stewart and Jazz Chisholm and Kyle Simmons and Todd Isaacs into the fold. Is this sort of with you, you know, I'm not sort of setting off any conspiracy theories here, but is this with you sort of looking towards the Bahamas World Baseball Classic squad of the future and saying, look, if we can do it in a GB uniform, we can do it in a Bahamian uniform too?
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, that's always been a goal of mine, to be able to don that uniform on an international stage like that. But nonetheless, still definitely proud to represent Great Britain and share that moment with all the guys in that team. Because I remember having to learn God Save Our Queen in Regensburg, and then to watch my fellow Bahamians have to sing it in Times Square in New York was such a thrilling moment. So to answer your question, yeah, definitely. I think we all want that opportunity to represent the Bahamas, you know, on that stage. But if we can't represent the Bahamas, we'd love to represent Great Britain for as long as we can and eventually get into that World Baseball Classic past the qualifier.
I watched all the games, and I was talking to Chris Bissett for another interview that we were doing a short time ago, and I said to him that it looked like you guys, particularly you Bahamian guys, but all of you were just having a whale of a time. It looked like it was fun. Like Chris said to me that it was the most pressure and the most intrigue he'd felt in as a baseball player. You know, he said, you know, sometimes even as a pro, each game you take it as it comes, and if you lose, you lose, and if you win, you win, and you've got another game tomorrow. But you know, these games mattered, and it really looked like that to all of you watching it as a fan. Is that, I guess that must feel this felt the same for you whilst you're out on the field?
Well, I think, you know what, we just took a lot of pride in what we were doing. I mean, we're representing so many different things, and I don't think we took that for granted. You know, I think we understood what we were representing. You know, we were representing, first of all, we were representing Great Britain. We were representing the Bahamas. We were representing our families. We were representing ourselves. And I think there was just so many people that were going to be impacted by what we were doing around the world. And I think we took a lot of pride in that. And I think that's what you saw when you saw us playing. You know, we were having fun, but at the same time, we were on a mission to do something, you know. And I think that's what made it so enjoyable, to share that ride with those guys, because we were all there like recognizing what we were up against and at the same time what we were representing this whole time in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you as a guy who's been around the professional game for a long time, you've worked with a lot of different coaches. I wondered what you made of Liam Carroll as the man on the bench. He's a guy who I've got to know a little bit over the last year or so through doing this podcast, and he's certainly a character. He's got his own ways and his own methods, and they are all really interesting, I think. I wondered what you thought of him as a guy, whether you knew him before and what you made of him as a coach.
Right. Well, I had met Liam before, and I love him as a coach. You know what I mean? I think he put us in great situations to succeed. He put us in very good situations to win baseball games. And so I think first and foremost, that's important. You know, and he's a great person. I think, you know, that sometimes that's overlooked when you're thinking about this, because sometimes the biggest thing is being able to have a relationship with your manager and with your coach that allows you to relax and allow you to be who you are. And we had a lot of different personalities on that team. And at the same time, like, but they were all able to shine. If you were a loud, charismatic dude, like, you were able to shine. If you were quiet and just in your corner, you were able to do that. And so I think he did a really good job of bringing us together to get the best out of each one of us. You know, I know we kind of ended up a little short in our goal. But I think, you know, without Liam, we don't even get that close to making that even happen. So you got to give a lot of credit to him for putting that squad together and putting us in a position to even, you know, have a chance to play in the final game there and an opportunity to actually, you know, win that qualifier.
Yeah, definitely. And watching it here, it was obvious. You know, you were in the game in that final game for the whole time. And that in itself is pretty remarkable when you look at the roster of the guys who you're up against. I mean, I think Ike Davis and Jason Marquis between them have, you know, I think it was something like 10 times as many major league appearances than the entire GB squad. So, you know, getting into the game with them was amazing, really.
Yeah, I mean, we knew we were the underdogs kind of going into there, but that didn't stop us, man. That didn't stop us from believing that we could have won that thing. And, you know, I think, you know, we were like one or two guys from really pulling it off, you know. But I think we took a step in the right direction as a team, and we took a step in the right direction in a lot of different ways, in progress in baseball and in Great Britain as well as in the Bahamas. So I think, we might not have won the qualifier, but we won a lot of little battles that I think is going to help us down the road, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think so too, and I certainly hope so. I hope that isn't the last that we hear of us over the next few years. Just sort of dwelling on those guys who were your fellow countrymen. They all looked like unreal, and some of these kids are 18 years old. Jazz Chisholm is 18 years old. He's the number five prospect in the Arizona Diamondbacks, and Champ Stewart was one of the standout stars of the Arizona Fall League. This winter just gone. So I guess you, having listened to what you said earlier on, you must take a deal of personal pride in watching these guys coming here and succeeding and in being on a field with them as a teammate too, I guess.
Oh, no doubt about it. I think that playing in New York and Great Britain, and people won't believe me, but that definitely top five moment in my baseball career. And I wouldn't even, I would go as far to say the best moment in my baseball career. And I've had some special moments, getting my first hit off of Kershaw, the Derek Jeter moment, but I would put that time being able to represent Great Britain with my fellow countrymen on that stage right up there with those moments, and so take a great deal of pride in actually that having that opportunity to compete with them, as well as a great deal of pride like watching them succeed, and watching baseball in the Bahamas rise, and watching baseball in Great Britain rise. And so no doubt about it.
And just how good, without asking you to name any names particularly, because I know, we all love all of our children equally. just how good can those guys be? Yeah, I think, I was sat there watching and thinking, are we seeing the first ever British, and we're going to claim them, regular major leaguer out on the field there? It kind of looked like that possibly might be happening. And of course, by rote, the first Bahamian who's going to be playing every day. And that's not to take away from your own achievements. I guess, do you think that too? Do you think that guy's there?
No doubt about it. You know what? It's so hard to say, man. And those guys are so young. I just know that I'm rooting very hard for each and every one of them. They got a long way to go in terms of their development. Obviously, I think Champ's a lot closer. He played the AA level. He's in Major League camp right now with the Mets. He has all the tools to be a star. But baseball is such an interesting game, man. But I think if they continue to work hard, I think if they continue to want to learn the game of baseball, I think they're going to all give themselves a very good opportunity to be major leaguers for a very long time. And I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to see it happen and unfold in front of me, to be honest. So that's the exciting part about it, just kind of watching these guys do this thing and make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I read a couple of articles and conversations and interviews that you've done in the last couple of years about the development of baseball in the Bahamas. And one of the things that stuck in my mind from reading those was that you were saying that you want International Draft Day to become as big an event in the Bahamas as it is in, for example, the Dominican Republic or Venezuela. How far do you think we are off that? Where is baseball in the Bahamas? I guess it's still behind basketball and behind cricket, and I guess soccer to an extent too. But is it sort of coming up on the rails?
It's growing, and it's growing very fast. It's rapidly rising to one of the top sports in the country. And I think it's a testament to the hard work that the coaches down in the Bahamas are putting in, to the talent that we have in the young men, and the hard work those young men are putting in. But it's definitely on the rise, and it's moving very, very fast. A lot of young children are excited about the game, wanting to learn the game. And once again, it gives me goosebumps to talk about it, because I remember when I started playing, I think we had in the little league that I came up in, we had like four teams, and now I think they have like over 30 teams. When I got into the game, it was two Bahamians in professional baseball. And then at one point it was just me by myself. And now, we got double digit guys playing professional baseball. So that's exciting to see. And it's, to kind of witness it right firsthand is pretty awesome. It's really, really awesome.
And what is your role in it? Are you a mentor? Are you an advisor to these guys? Are you a coach, or are you just, you know, that guy who everyone's seen the clip of on YouTube diving headfirst into home plate? Or I guess, are you all of these things?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit of everything, man. I think I don't push myself on the guys because, you know, I think they got to create their own path, but I'm here for them if they need me, you know. The same way it goes when I go back home and I watch Little League games and coaches. If they ask me to, I'm a step in there and kind of give them my advice, you know. And then when I see things that I think that we might be able to benefit from by making some changes on a national level, I let my voice be heard, you know, whether it's in the press or to the powers to be. I voice my opinion, but I think I try to be a chameleon. I just try to take on whatever role I need to take on at that time. And I kind of go from there without kind of forcing myself into one particular role. So kind of living outside of the box and being whatever I need to be for baseball in the Bahamas.
And what is next for you when you do eventually have to hang up the spikes and fingers crossed it isn't going to be this year? Is it going to be going into baseball administration in the Bahamas, getting behind, getting young guys over to the States to get opportunities? You sound incredibly passionate about it, and you sound like a guy who's going to stay involved in it in some capacity.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to span a little bit beyond baseball. I think it's going to span sports in general, just kind of being able to help young men and women with opportunities to pursue their passions. And, you know, man, that might not even be in sports. It might be in an academic field. And that's my goal. My goal is just to be able to help them pursue their passions. In terms of baseball, you know, it's going to always be my baby. So I'm going to, you know, definitely have my hand in it to a certain extent. But I think, you know, one of the things that I look forward to launching later on this year is a nonprofit organization in the Bahamas that is going to be centered around mentorship for student athletes. And I look forward to that because I think that's going to kind of bridge the gap between sports and life for some of these young athletes. You know, we hear too many times about athletes that are very, very talented. And you always ask the question, what happened to him or what happened to her? And so, you know, my goal is to bridge that gap. And so we don't hear that story too much. We hear like, wow, what a gifted athlete. And you know, they saw it through and they made things happen. That's the stories that I kind of want to hear. And so, you know, that's going to be something that I'm definitely get involved in a lot. One of the many things that I think I could see myself getting into when it's all said and done.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. And it sounds like, you know, coming back to the start of our conversation again, it's you taking that lesson that you learned from Kelly Hunt back when you were playing in indie ball in you know, the time before you ended up at the Braves, and applying it back to, you know, a whole country. You guys should be going out there and having fun and taking the opportunity and making the most of it. So that sounds like a really positive way to make something lasting of your career, and you know, good luck with it, I guess. So watch this space on that.
Thank you, man. I'm really looking forward to that launching and being able to share that aspect with the Bahamian people. We actually did an event in January. It was kind of like an educational forum, and you know, we had I didn't know what to expect, and people showed up in numbers, and it was standing room only for 2 hours. And so I think people are excited about, you know, hearing what the information that's out there for them to, you know, to make decisions that would help them with their futures and start to think about the long term and how sports can affect so many in a positive light. So one thing I have on my agenda is to get a team, a bunch of young guys to come down to the UK, come down to Great Britain and play like an international friendly. And we'll come down 1 year and we'll kind of let the children stay with the homes of the players in GB, and when the players from GB come back down to the Bahamas the following year, kind of like an exchange program. So that's on my agenda. I want to see that happen. I want to see that happen soon. So that's definitely something I'm interested in seeing happen. Initially, I think it's going to be baseball just because that's my baby and the connection that I have with Liam and the Federation over there. So that's something I definitely want to see. But you just gave me a great idea. Like, why not other sports? You know, why not soccer? You know, why not these things? So, you know, my goal is to be able to expose expose these young children to different cultures. And because it's, you know, a part of it is about playing the game and getting better at it. But a part of it, too, is growing in life and growing as young men and women and being exposed to so much more. And so, yes, you, I mean, it's going to be as many sports as we're allowed to do.
Well, that sounds like a really positive note, I think, on which to end. It's the future of the Bahamas baseball community and the future of the GB baseball community are safe in your hands, Antoine. So, you know, here's to many more years of happy partnership, and anything that we can do to help, we will do. You know, I can't speak for the greater Great Britain baseball community, but I can speak for myself. And if you need our help, then we'll be here.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that. And I'm going to hold you to that. And I'm definitely going to be reaching out to you sooner than later. So
no problem. Well, you know, it's the least we can do for me, for what's been an absolutely fascinating sort of hour talking to you. And I hope for the guys who are tuning in for a fascinating hour listening to you. So before I let you go, you know, just it's becoming of me to ask if there's anywhere that people listening can find out about your foundation, can follow you on Twitter, for example, to try and find out where you're playing, what the foundation's going to be doing, and find out how they can help you on that front too.
Okay. I think we're gonna get some more information about that foundation out there shortly. But if you have Instagram out there and you want to follow me, it's Antoine Richardson 242. You'll see some photos about some things that we have done right there in the foundation until we set up the actual website for the foundation. And you could also follow on Twitter if you kind of want to hear about some things that's going on. And my Twitter is @arichardson242. But so either Instagram, Antoine Richardson 242, or arichardson 242 on Twitter. So those things will keep you guys up to date on what's happening. And I look forward to posting some photos of GB versus the Bahamas really, really soon.
Yeah, well, maybe we can come along and be the commentary team for you. We can do that at very least.
Awesome.
Yeah, and for those of you who have forgotten and aren't doing it already, you can follow the podcast on Twitter @batflips_nerds and do it. And definitely go and follow Antoine. Antoine, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely awesome talking to you. And thank you very much to everyone who's downloaded this and is listening at home.